Hi, everybody. Welcome to Book Tales with Rand Dugas and Heather Fowler. Today, we are delighted to feature Eric Nguyen, author of Things We Lost to the Water, published by Alfred A. Knopf.
Book Tales, Readings, Cocktails, and Craft is a monthly podcast series with live author readings, custom cocktails, and discussions on the craft of writing. Why cocktails? We thought that having a cocktail while listening to your favorite author chat and give a reading would be a really fun idea. Today, we are drinking the Longan Colada Mocktail, inspired by Eric's book. The recipe is on the Hot Redhead Media blog link in the podcast description if you'd like to make it and have one with us.
Eric Nguyen earned an MFA in creative writing from McNeese State University in Louisiana. He has been awarded fellowships from Lambda Literary and the Tin House Workshop. He was the editor-in-chief of diacritics.org. He lives in Washington, D.C., and Things We Lost to the Water, the novel we discussed today, was listed on Barack Obama's summer reading list for 2021. Of this novel, acclaimed author Charles Yu says not only that the book is exquisitely well-written, but also that Things We Lost to the Water is, quote, a tender, haunting story of loss, love, family, and survival, a moving and powerful debut.
Things We Lost to the Water is a mesmerizing story of familial bonds, assimilation, and home that centers around an immigrant Vietnamese family. Separated from her husband, Wong must figure out how to make a life for herself and her two young sons in New Orleans while coming to terms with the fact that her life will never be as she imagined. The family adapts to American life in ways that sometimes threaten to cause a rift between them, and it is only when Hurricane Katrina devastates their new home that they can find their way back to one another.
Wonderful. We so enjoyed reading this book. How are you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it's been a busy year last year, but things are slower now, so I'm able to relax a little bit more.
Oh, good.
What have you been up to this last year?
Well, in addition to the book coming out, I've been trying to write my next book, which it's going. I'll get there.
That's wonderful. Well, we're really looking forward to talking with you about your work and having you give us a reading a little bit later. Do you enjoy giving live readings?
I guess it feels a little bit weird to hear my own words and my own voice aloud because, like, for such a long time, they've been words in my head. So yeah, it's always a little bit weird, but I enjoy it.
Aw. Can you tell us how this book came to be, where you got the idea for it, and when you wrote it? When did you draft it?
So for the longest time, I've tried to write, you could say, the story of my parents and how they got to America. They were refugees from the Vietnam War, but they never told me how they got to America. Really, they didn't tell me about their own refugee story. So I tried to experiment with that story through fiction to see what they might have gone through. But it wasn't until I got into graduate school in Louisiana that I really put my mind to it and started writing it. Through my 3 years in graduate school, I basically drafted the whole thing multiple times over. After I graduated, I wrote some more, edited some more. It was like a 7-year process of just writing, editing, revising, doing that all over again every couple of months. But eventually it's made its way to an audience.
Now, do you think that being in Louisiana, being in this place here, sort of helped you?
Yeah, definitely. I felt like it gave my characters that I was writing a place to inhabit. I mean, like, I started writing this from my birthplace, which is the DC area, but I felt stuck. I felt probably because it was too close to me, which kind of made me move away so far for a little bit. And it was in Louisiana that I felt more comfortable because it felt more like fiction if I said it somewhere totally different. Yeah. And to my surprise, there is a Vietnamese community in New Orleans. So I think it was just kind of lucky that I found myself in Louisiana and finding that Vietnamese community and then being able to write this fiction story.
I love that. It was like it was meant to be. Huh?
And there's such beautiful parallels. I mean, I think that that allowed the water imagery to really travel quite a bit because the Louisiana part of it, of the setting, was so evocative. Can you tell us something about how you decided to become an author? Kind of when you made the leap for the formal decision or when you knew this was for you?
So I always wanted to be a writer. I felt like it was something that I liked doing as a kid. I mean, I wrote just for fun for myself on my computer. And that was fun. I was okay with that. And I didn't really know that you could become a writer. I mean, I saw writers like in book form, but I didn't know how one would go about getting their book published. I didn't even know I could take courses in college. So I went, when I got my undergraduate degree, it was in sociology because I guess that was something. I didn't know what else to study. It wasn't until after I graduated that I applied to this writing fellowship just on a whim, and I got into it on a whim, luckily. And from there, I learned that you can go to school to become a writer. You can study the craft. From there, I applied to MFA programs, and it was once I was in my MFA program that I kind of saw myself as a writer, as someone who could one day get his book published.
Nice.
When you were drafting the book, I'm curious what led you to structure it the way that you did. For those who haven't read it yet, there are multiple point of views and somewhat close chronology in the beginning, and then you sort of move through time a little bit more quickly towards the end. So I was wondering, as you were drafting, what were you thinking about that?
Well, when I started drafting, I kind of knew where I wanted to begin and where I wanted to end. So it was just really the process of going to point A to point B. And how I got to that process was not really chronologically. I kind of jumped around the place, like what became the first chapter. After writing that, I wrote like what became the fourth chapter. Then I went to like the eighth chapter. So it was really back and forth of what I written. So it felt really natural to just continue that, to have like this novel kind of jumps through time and jump through perspectives. And I think in the end, it really worked out because it's a family novel and we get basically the point of view of every main character. We get close points of view from their perspectives. And I felt that kind of jumping through time, we kind of get, well, practically we get to the ending that I wanted, but also we get to see the sweeping motion of their lives and how they kind of grow into the people that they become by the end.
Yeah, you really get a sense of that.
Yeah, definitely. And it was so funny because the next question I had was going to be about how the family is the through line for this book. And in agreement with you, no matter whose POV we follow, we're really tracing this particular family through time. And also for the boys, we're reading kind of a sort of coming of age narrative for both of them. Did you know while you were writing that this book would encompass so many stories or aspects of these characters' lives? And which characters were you most drawn to write about?
I think my first intention was really just to tell it from one person's perspective. So that wasn't really my...
That changed very quickly, right?
Yeah, definitely. So like I did... Like in my mind, it would be just a simple story about this one mother from her perspective. But I felt like the characters eventually grew onto their own characters, and it felt right to see it from their point of view. And I guess it just spiraled out of control in a way. I
think, in a good way.
Yeah. I think for me, the character that I found myself most drawn to, I can't really pick. I feel that I'm kind of drawn to each of them. I feel like I spent so much time with them that they're kind of lovable in their own way, at least for me, like they're my children in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you went through so many edits of this book. It sounds like you went through a number of different edits. Remind me how many edits you went through with these characters with this story?
About seven major edits, like revisions.
How long did that take you, all of that?
About 7 years, like one draft per year.
I'm from New Orleans, and so I really enjoyed reading the details on the city in the book. And I think Ben is a really interesting character because he grew up in New Orleans, unlike Tong, who remembers Vietnam. And I like how readers view the city through the different characters' perspective. It's almost like the city's a character, too. And it made me think about how our experience determines the way we view a place, frame a place. And so I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, or how you were thinking about incorporating the city as you were writing.
Yeah, I think it was really important for me to get the city down right, especially as someone who is not native to the city. So I felt like I had to get my research in, get it done in a way that respects the city. But also, I think as my characters grew, they did have different experiences. So that required different views of the city, of what the city means to them. And I think that's not even stable within each character. Like the mother character, when she first comes to New Orleans, she's kind of afraid of it. But eventually you see her years later, she's comfortable with it. There's a passage where she calls it her city. And by the end of the novel, she is the typical New Orleans person. So I think the experiences of the character really frame how they see the city and what the city means to them. And of course, that changes throughout time.
I was really interested in the way that China moved through this book, as well as Vietnamese characters, but also in terms of the racism that was directed at the characters and many times. And so what I wanted to know was, were you driving at something specific there with negative impulses toward the Chinese folks? Is it something that you wanted to depict that, you know, people can be really racist and not be clear on who they're talking to in various scenarios, kind of a generalization? Or I guess I was just curious, what did you want to bring to your reader with regard to the Chinese-Vietnamese relations in the text and also maybe the Chinese-white American relations in the text?
I think when I brought in the Chinese character and that Chinese through line.
Oh, and that's a little old woman. Yeah. But I mean, when the characters, when the main characters are getting this racism, when our Vietnamese boys are getting this racism directed at them and they're being called Chinese, is that a common experience? I guess I just wanted you to speak to how you were weaving these things together.
Yeah, I think the way race is seen in America, like you're either Black or white. And if you're Asian, for example, there's the discourse around that in America is without nuance. So I felt like I had to show that in some way. So like growing up, people saw an Asian person, they especially Americans, they would automatically assume that person is Chinese. And that is a form of racism in a way, is a form of stereotypes, preconceived notions, and it doesn't really show the diversity of Asia as well as the Asian American experience. Chinese Americans have very different experiences from Vietnamese Americans, yet still the racism in America against Asian Americans always narrows it down to Chinese. And I wanted to show, I guess, that racism that not only the Vietnamese community gets, but any Asian community gets in the U.S. It's that people can't seem to tell us apart.
But what's worse, they're not even really trying, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what's really offensive about the whole thing is like, there's not even a small amount of effort to be culturally sensitive, right? In many cases.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's what was hammered home by the graduate student scene. That scene was just brutally heartbreaking when they're kind of harassing the Ben character. When you started writing that, did you originally even imagine that this character would be, I don't know, in this group of like younger, like almost like a young prodigy? That was kind of an exciting event. Can you speak to like writing about that, about being in that literary world with that character?
Well, I think for that character, I didn't envision him to be, I guess, this writer, academic person. He kind of just became that way. And eventually he just made his way into this really white academic setting. And I feel like his experience is really similar to experiences to a lot of people of color that find themselves in academia, especially because like academia has long been like a white space, really. And people of color are seen as anomalies, and their intelligence there, the reason for being there is always questioned. I feel like I even like experienced this to a certain extent. Like people of color, they kind of have their race. People can see that. And because of that difference, I guess they don't want to see that person as someone who can be smart, but they're okay with seeing that person as a token, for example, or a person who came in just because of affirmative action. So I felt if I wanted to explore academia or wanted my character to be academia, at least for a little bit, I had to explore those issues of racism in schools and colleges.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That was such a moving passage. And I feel like you were exploring the trope of the white savior with that as well, with the German professor who's helping this young student. Okay, well, I don't want to take too much of the time over because I know Ryan has a question coming.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the water in the novel. There was so much beautiful and at times terrible water imagery in your story. Like, I really loved how Ben and Howie kiss in the water. But then for me, I was here for Katrina. It was difficult sometimes reading that section and how Huang connected the Katrina water to when she was in the boat and the rice water. There was just, I just kept seeing water all over the place in the novel. And I'm sure some things that I missed. And so clearly it's a symbol in the novel, but I was wondering if you were thinking about it also as sort of a universal connector of sorts when you were writing.
Well, I think when I was writing, the water symbolism didn't really struck me. I guess it just made its way naturally into the narrative. It was only like later in other drafts that I kind of saw it.
Were you surprised at how much you put in there that you didn't even maybe realize?
Yeah, I really was, because when you're writing a draft, you just want to get through to the end. You just want to tell a story and tell it well. And it's in the revision process that you kind of have to really look at the work kind of through a magnifying glass. And it was through rereading it intentfully that I saw water everywhere. And
you're like, whoa, drafts, I did that.
Yeah, the next drafts, I kind of lean into that and it kind of just worked out. But I think water kind of really connects the world of these characters. I mean, they leave Vietnam by water. They come to a place that's so near water, New Orleans, and just the Gulf Coast in general. And I think both communities, the New Orleans community and the Vietnamese refugee communities, can really understand water as something that is beautiful, something that can give you safety, for example, something that's necessary. But water can also be dangerous for the Vietnamese people. Leaving by boat on the water was dangerous. They kind of didn't know where they were going. There were storms, there were pirates. So water was dangerous. At the same time, people in New Orleans and Louisiana, they can see the danger in water as well, especially with hurricanes, rising sea levels. So I really felt that it was a way to connect these two cultures just because they understood each other so much, which isn't really seen a lot, that connection. So I hope that connection is strong in my book.
It really is. And it's really beautifully done.
Oh, for sure. And then something else that I thought was, it's interesting because you're tracing the certain symbols as you're reading them through the book. Water was one for me. And the idea of fathers was another one. But it was great for me when you're talking about the water, how the concept of fathers felt like it was echoing through many of the passages with the water, almost like they were aligned symbols in certain places. But I also liked how there were father-like characters with both Ben and Tong who step up in these roles, really kind of these admirable men who want to help these boys who have been abandoned by their own dad. And I really liked how you handled Vin coming into the family's life really delicately and realistically when someone enters the home of a single parent. Did you know men like Father Hugh, am I saying his name right? Vin and Professor Schreiber, who you may have partially modeled these characters after? They were so well done.
I mean, they're not based in real people. I guess they're kind of parts and pieces of people that I saw growing up and even to my college days. I feel like I was special in a way that I saw these people, not necessarily men, but just people of the community, whatever that community is, who take up the responsibility of taking care of the kids around them. I feel like that's really how a lot of communities work, at least where I've been, in like the Vietnamese community as well as the New Orleans community. I feel like, especially like the New Orleans community, at least when I was there at the Louisiana communities, there was this feeling that we were all in it together in a way, that we're like a one big family, and one success, a person's success, is the community's success. And I feel that's the way a lot of times in communities of color. And I think I wanted to at least have that kind of figure in the book. And I felt it was natural for that person to be a father figure in particular, because these characters, the two boys, they didn't have that biological father. So it felt right for them to have these surrogate fathers in a way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think what I was really leaning into as a reader was that it just felt like your book had a gentle, a beautiful, subtle praise in this book for this non-toxic male energy. Were you wanting to amplify the beauty in men helping other men with kindness in this book? Because I really feel like you did that for me a lot.
I'm not sure if it was consciously. I felt, of course, it turned out that way. Well, for Vin particularly, I wanted to put him in contrast to Hung, who is this... Hung is the mother, and she's like very strategizing. She needs to help her kids grow up. She's the head of household compared to Vin, who is a softer person. He's kind of a slack. He is a slack. He doesn't have a job for most of the book, and he's the opposite. He's the opposite of Hung. So I felt like that they complemented each other, and that just led way to a very non-toxic male character, which I felt softened the other characters around him, which I felt was very much needed in a story which could have been really hard and gritty. And also I gave my characters a break from all that grittiness of life, because life is difficult, but also has its beautiful moments of family and community, whatever that is. And these characters I felt was just, they're in the background, but they are so important to these characters and how they become who they are.
Yeah, I really love the moment when he took her to the Southern Decadence Festival and didn't really realize what it was about, but it was sweet. It was sweet. I want to kind of come back to something we talked about a few minutes earlier about Hurricane Katrina, which looms large in your story. And it's a tricky subject to write about because of people's sensitivity to it. There've been incorrect or exaggerated portrayals of it in other people's writing. I think you did a really a nice and a respectful treatment of it in your book. But I was wondering what considerations you took when you got to writing this part. Did you talk to people who experienced it or did you do research?
Yeah, it was really important for me to get that right, especially someone who didn't live through that and knowing that it was a disaster, a human disaster for people. So I did a lot of research through books and a lot through media coverage at the time. I remember like YouTubing just news coverage of Hurricane Katrina, and it really gave me insight into what was happening on the ground. So I took that and I kind of used that as my starting point for the chapters, the chapter where I talk about Hurricane Katrina. But I also was cognizant of not trying to, I guess, tell the story of Hurricane Katrina. The book is not a novel of Hurricane Katrina. I wanted to just show it almost objectively, because I'm in no place to have that, I guess, that feeling of losing a home. And I want to respect that. So I, throughout that chapter, a lot of it were news coverage, radio coverage. And I did that purposefully, again, out of respect. And I felt like I couldn't go beyond just the beginning of Hurricane Katrina when it comes down, because again, I don't have that lived experience of having lived through the aftermath of the disaster. So again, it was, I had to be respectful, and I think that was the right way to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, for sure. Well, on another topic, I really love the way Ben is taken in at the gay bar earlier in the book and the way the gay people move through this book in general. From his experiences in New Orleans to the interesting time in France to the gay man who helps his brother Tuong and Addie during Katrina. Did you feel like you were wanting to say something important to the reader about representation for gay characters in this book too?
I think what I was trying to display is that gay people, queer people exist everywhere. I mean, you could find them in the gay bar, but you could also find them walking the streets at a pool. Yeah, I think that visibility is important, especially I feel like growing up, I didn't have any gay role models. I didn't know anyone who was gay. So it was important for me to put those kind of characters in, but also weave those characters in into as natural people. And they're not there just to be gay. They're there to be characters. And I feel it was important to have like this diverse cast of queer men to show the diversity of queer people.
I have a question on, I'm always interested in the idea of a person who finds their place. And really that theme rose up to me out of your book, the idea of finding a place or feeling at home. And it really spoke to me. For Tuong, the place he felt he belonged was the Southern Boys for a little bit till he didn't. Ben getting to Paris and then he didn't like it and feeling like maybe there was no place for him and that he belonged. He didn't have a place. And Tuong's conflicted feelings when she first gets to New Orleans and then she goes back home. Some characters find or adapt to a place easier than others, I think, in life and in your book. And I was wondering, what do you think it is in your characters that makes them have such a difficult time finding their place?
I think part of it is being refugees. They're ripped out of their country in a way, violently, suddenly. So there's this feeling of being landless, literally for like the refugees who came out of Vietnam. They went by boat. They were landless. But I think that condition of being landless, of being not able to fit in, kind of translate to their time in their new country. At the same time, I think that's also a condition that is there for a lot of Asian American people. I mean, like when an Asian American person walks down the street, there's this perception that they don't belong here, that they must have been from somewhere else. And I feel like that kind of puts into question like anybody's perception of home when people around you are saying that you don't look like you come here. So I felt that was what I was trying to show in these characters, that of this particular Asian American experience of not being able to really settle in a way, because people are always, they always think you're from somewhere different, even if you were born here. So I thought that was really important to put in. But I think some like fare better in find home, partly because of the community that they have. I think it was really important, for example, that Hoong found a home partially through her love of Vin, who is kind of more settled down in a way in New Orleans. And for Thum, it was kind of harder. There was the Southern Boy gangs who did try to create this community, this kind of home. I mean, Thum even calls them a family. This gang is a family to him.
Yeah.
But again, like they're kind of toxic as well. So the way these characters adapt really depends on who they're around and what kind of community they can actually find themselves comfortable enough with to settle down, to find their roots there.
Yeah, I thought it was a beautiful thread when you had the brothers coming from such different spaces because one had experience in Vietnam and the other one did not. Just so many characters, so many themes, so many places in this book, such a broad amount of years are being covered. I can't resist. I have to ask you. So what's your next project? And is it more narrow or just as broad as this book?
Well, I am working on another project, a novel. I would say it's a little bit more narrow than this. I feel like this first novel is kind of epic in a way, the way it
managed to climb. Definitely. Yeah. So what is the topic of the next one? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, I'm the kind of writer who doesn't talk about their next work.
Okay.
Because like, I feel like if I say it, I kind of jinx myself.
I get
and
that.
I won't be able to write it.
Or it might diffuse the tension of the writing in itself. I don't know. I feel like sometimes for me too. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your publication experience for this book, the one that we're talking about today? Can you tell us how it got to be on a shelf? How you got your agent and all those things?
Well, I rewrote it. I revised it for 7 years. Then it came to a point that I felt like I was happy with what it became. From there, I shopped it around to agents. And that usually includes writing a query letter, selecting a passage to send along as a sample. I did that for a couple of agents. What I did is I looked through the books that I personally liked by contemporary writers and see who those authors' agents were and seeing if my work kind of fits with those authors' work. I reached out to those agents. Most of them said no. Some said, let me read some more. Eventually, I found my agent, Julie Stevenson, and she really liked it. She believed in the work. And from there, we edited it some more. So the editing doesn't stop. And from there, she sold the book to Knopf, and there's more editing after that. And then flash forward, and it was published.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, we are looking forward to hearing you read an excerpt from Things We Lost to the Water. But before we do that, let's have Rand tell us about today's mocktail, which was custom created for this book.
Today's booktail mocktail is called a longan colada. We're calling it that because this novel has a beautiful passage with longan fruit, and there's a pina colada in the story, so we thought it would make a really delicious drink. The recipe is on the blog if you'd like to make it and enjoy it while you listen at home. Here are the ingredients. It's a half a cup of pineapple juice, 2/3 cup of coconut cream, 2 to 3 ripe longan fruit peeled and seeded, 1 teaspoon of orange flower water, 1.5 teaspoons of simple syrup. And you put all that in a blender with some ice and process it. If you want to make it a cocktail, you can add a shot of white rum before blending.
Great. Eric, would you like to tell us a little bit about the passage you'll be reading for us today?
Well, I'm just going to read the first chapter. It's very short, but I think it sets the tone of the whole novel. It touches on themes, some symbolism that readers can expect throughout the book. And I felt it was like me trying to be a poet, and I'm kind of proud of it. So I guess that's a good enough reason to read it.
Yeah, wonderful. Take it away.
August 1979. New Orleans is at war. The long howl in the sky. What else can it mean? Hoong drops the dishes into the sink and grabs the baby before he starts crying. She begins running toward the door, but then remembers. This time, another son. She forgets his name temporarily. The howl is so loud. What's important is to find him. Is he under the bed? No, he is not under the bed. Is he hiding in the closet? No, he is not in the closet. Is he in the bathroom then? Behind the plastic curtains, sitting scared in the tub. As she turns around, he's at the door, holding on to the frame, his eyes watering, his cheeks red. "Mère," he cries. "Mom," the word reminds Hung everything she needs to know. The next moment, she grabs his hand and pulls him toward her chest. With this precious cargo, these two sons, she darts across the apartment, an arrow flying away from his bow, a bullet away from his gun. She's racing toward the door and leaping down the steps, but she can't move fast enough. The air is like water. It's like running through water, through an ocean. She feels the wetness on her legs and the water rising. And the sky, the early evening sky, with a spotting of stars already, is streaked red and orange like fire, like an explosion suspended mid-air. In that moment before the crush, the shattering, the death she's always imagined. Until someone yells, "Stop!" Someone tells her to stop. And just like that, the sirens hush, and the silence is violent. It slices. It cuts. Hurricane alarm, Bai Yang says. The old woman drops her cigarette. Just a hurricane alarm. A test. Nothing to be afraid of. She reaches over and cups Hung's cheek. "What do you mean?" Hung asks. "A test. They're doing a test. In case something happens." Bai Yang says, "Go home now, Gung Ai. Go home. Get some rest. It's getting late." Home. Late. Getting. There. Late. Who understands? Or maybe she does not. A thousand thoughts are still settling in her mind. Where were the sounds from before? Not the alarm, but the grating calls of the grackles in the trees. The whistling breeze, a car speeding past. Where are they now? She notices Dum at the gates. Her eyes light up. "Dum Ai," she calls. Dum holds onto the bars of the gate and watches three boys riding past on bicycles. One stands on his pedal. Another rides without hands, but only for a second before grabbing, in a panic motion, the handlebars. A younger one tries to keep up on training wheels. Three boys, three brothers. "Dum Ai," Hung calls again. Dum waves as the boys ride leisurely past. When they're gone, he returns, and Hung feels a mixture of pure happiness, comfort, and relief. Up the dirt road, a mother and her sons, hand in hand. And that's chapter one.
Wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That was great. Eric, I wanted to ask you, what have you learned on your path to becoming an author, and what advice would you offer to other new writers?
I think my advice is just keep going at it. I feel writing takes a lot of persistence, and that's not just about like people telling you you can't do it, but also yourself telling you you can't do it. I think a lot of writing is self-doubt, and the only way to, I guess, get through that is just ignore it, just keep writing. And I guess another related advice would be, a writer has to write. You have to find a way to get the writing done. That might mean waking up very early. That might mean staying up late at night. The important part is to, in a way, find a schedule that works for you and make sure you get those words down, because otherwise you won't be able to tell your story.
That's great advice.
Yeah, for sure. But and I think, too, at least for me anyway, it's been a big comfort to have other authors that, you know, you look back to that you enjoy reading, the aspect of reading being connected to what you're going to do or what you would like to do or how to keep writing. Related to that, I noticed that there were a lot of different authors referenced in this book and multiple professors of literature in the book we're featuring today, plus students of literature. This was telling me you're a big reader. So now you need to tell us who your favorite authors are. That's what I'd like to hear.
There's so many. I feel like it's difficult to choose.
Go for a top 10. Hit us with, you know, a little swath of them.
I can maybe give you a top five.
Okay, we'll take it.
We'll take it.
So I really like Mavis Gallant, the Canadian short story writer. I like Raymond Carver, the minimalist short story writer. I like Julia Alvarez. She wrote Javier Garcia, Girls Lost Their Accents. I like Sandra Cisneros, particularly her short story collection, Woman Hollering Creek.
I love that one. Yeah,
definitely. And I would say, it's the last one. Who can I say? Anne Tyler. I love her books. I try to get it every time she comes out with a new one. She usually writes about family and their history. And I feel like that really shows, or at least I hope that shows in my book, that whole epicness of family and where they've been and where they're going. I feel that has influenced me a whole lot.
I'm always curious about writers' preferred space for writing. And so I wanted to ask you where you like to write. Do you have a certain spot that you write? And also, do you write longhand or computer? Do you listen to music? Like, what's your scenario when you write?
For me, I think the best place to write is at a desk. I'm usually facing a window. I like just looking out at the world. I feel like writing is such a lonely activity. A window to look out into the real world really helps just keep you like tethered to that real world and not just kind of go into your own head for a long time. In terms of writing rituals, sometimes listen to music, sometimes I don't. I think it just really depends on my mood and whether I want that influence around. I feel like if you listen to something too much, it might influence how your writing becomes. So sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. So it's, for me, it's about balance, really.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes I write to music, but I think most of the time I don't, actually.
I'm ridiculous because I'll start out thinking I want to write to music and I'll turn it on. And then as I'm typing, I'll just inch the volume down gradually until a half an hour later, nobody can hear any music. And I'm just typing, thinking I'm writing to music. It, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But well, listen, I wanted to ask you another question because I just think it's so interesting. When you are writing, some people feel like they're writing to one person. They're writing to a muse. Some people feel like they're writing to themselves, for themselves. Other people feel like they're writing for a group in their heritage or maybe the whole world. When you're writing, who are you writing for?
For me, I think when I'm writing, at least the first couple of drafts, I'm really just writing for myself. I mean, I feel like if I think of an audience, that will kind of paralyze me because at that point, you're kind of worrying what people would think. And I feel like that kind of hinders the writing, kind of stops you. It kind of makes you censor yourself. So I feel like it was important for me to really just write for my own pleasure in a way, to tell a story I want to tell. Because otherwise, I feel like I wouldn't be able to write as freely as I could.
Great. Yeah. Thank you so much for spending time with us at Book Tales today.
Thank you for having me. I had a wonderful time and there were great questions.
Oh, we really enjoyed talking to you and hearing you read from your work.
Yes. Thank you. And everybody, please order Eric's book, Things We Lost to the Water, and be sure to check out www.hotredheadmedia.com and subscribe to the blog for more information on the Book Tales readings and drinks. Also, subscribe to this podcast, which releases once a month, for more conversations with amazing literary authors. Thanks again for listening to Book Tales. See you next time.